foi uma coisa nova, já acabou.
Demora
logo.
To make a fair announcement quickly. I was informed this morning when I arrived at Parliament that there's a doctor's appointment scheduled for the chairperson of the committee. Now we wanted to check whether was there no way that the appointment can be postponed, but it was not possible. So it means then, honourable members, the chair will join us late in this meeting because he started somewhere in the hospital, and then from there she will come straight to the committee meeting. But because already the meeting we have scheduled it, and there was also no way as well to postpone the timing, because as all members know, at 3 o'clock it's the House sitting, so members have to be there. So on the basis of that, the apologies that I have in front of me, honourable members, we have received an apology from honourable Forth, who is also went for a surgery as well, and also we've got an apology from the minister, and also an apology from the deputy minister. On the basis of that, I think the other members of the committee can get us going, honourable members, so that we don't lose much time. So because the chair is not around, and then my proposal will be that before we can give the department a platform to brief us on the ocean's economy, members will recall this presentation, we wanted to have it as early as possible, but unfortunately because Parliament kept on changing the parliamentary program, and those changes, they also affected the planning of the committees as well. Then we have to push them further down until we are receiving this presentation so late. We wanted to get it as early as in August, September, so, but unfortunately we couldn't. So before I can do anything further, I would suggest, the honourable members, now that the chair is not around, in the meantime, let's have an acting chairperson who will preside in the meantime until the chair comes back to the committee meeting. On the basis of that, I will request the members, in terms of Rule 176 of the Rules of the National Assembly, subsection 1 requires us that we must appoint or elect an acting chair who can preside over the meeting in the interim while the chairperson is not yet around. She promised us she might be here at about past 1, but we know so many things happens in hospital. She might be delayed and all of that, so that we can proceed with our meeting. Can I then request honourable members to propose an acting person in the meantime? Ma Mokgego.
Thank you, Mr. Bulletin. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a bright day. You all look bright and beautiful too. Let me come to what is suggested. I propose the name of Patricia, Honorable Patricia Adams, to take charge of the meeting and act as chair until the chairperson takes over. Thank you very much.
Okay. There's the proposal, honourable members. Ma Adams is requested to be the acting chair. Meanwhile, the chair is not around. Can I check the seconder, Ndadubekwa?
Thank you, Secretary. My name is Simpiwe Bekwa. The name of Honorable Adams to be a chair is seconded by Simpiwe Bekwa. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks, Babu Bekwa. The name is seconded, honorable members. Is there any other proposal? It seems no. Can I then declare that Ma Adams, you have been nominated to act. Meanwhile, the chair is not around until she joins the meeting, the committee meeting. Please, you can come over, Ma, and continue with the committee, official committee meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Bortina, and thank you to the members. I really, really do appreciate it. But before you leave, I would welcome you all to this meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. And before you leave, I would like the honorable members to introduce themselves. I am Patricia Adams. I'm the whip of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. And with me is Mr. Bortina. He's the secretary to the portfolio committee, and Dr. Kuzwayo, that is the content advisor to the committee. Honorable Bekwa, we can start with you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Simpiwe Bekwa, a member of this committee of tourism. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Agnes Buck, and I'm a member of Parliament. Morning, members of Parliament and the department. My name is Susan Jobo, member of Parliament.
Good afternoon, everyone. The one who's on the mic is Thembalang Tsepe from the Eastern Cape, the home of leisure. I greet you in the name of coastal and marine tourism. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Bekwa. I have the privilege to introduce to you our new acting DG. That sounds so nice. And she is a Malibongwe. So I'd like you, acting DG, to introduce yourself, and then afterwards the support staff.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Shamila Chetiar. I'm acting DG today because our DG is on leave. He sends his apologies. But my real role in the department is as the DDG responsible for destination development. And the coastal marine tourism area of work falls within my portfolio.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The name is Stephen Pierce. I'm Chief Director responsible for destination planning and investment coordination in the department.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Peter van der Tak. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General of Tourism.
Good afternoon, members, and good afternoon to the colleagues from the department. My name is Sanda Loni, and I'm the researcher for tourism.
Good afternoon, everybody. Ismail Hussain from PNG.
Good day, members. I'm the committee assistant of the committee.
Thank you. I think we all feel welcome. And I want to thank the members, and you are excused. I know you have other responsibilities. So thank you very, very much for making this meeting possible. Thank you, Honorable Tuck, Honorable Jobo, and I know Honorable Keko has another meeting to attend to. Thank you. Now, members and members of the department. You know, when Operation Pakisa was announced way back in 2014, there was very, very big expectations. And it's nearly 5 years since it was announced. And we all are looking very forward to what you are going to present to us today at CDG. So, it's over to you, Mr. Partner. Before we start this, you know, we have a thing that they call climate change. And for the second time in this term, we have this huge fire in George and Meisner. Can you enlighten us, the committee, what is the department S&T doing? How are they assisting them before we go on with the presentation? If you can't answer us, you can come back with us.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think the fires in George are really very devastating. Minister Hanekom was actually on site yesterday. And at present, there's been a loss of 8 lives, and they were evacuating 600 people yesterday. So at this point in time, I think that the immediate need is to actually take care of the people who are in danger, to relocate them. Our teams from DIA, because Minister Hanekom at the moment is also acting Minister of Environmental Affairs, our teams from DIA, the working for fire teams, are actually on the ground battling those blazes. So at this point in time, Minister Hanekom did meet with the family of the bereaved, and we haven't made any assessment yet in terms of what support the department could provide beyond this, except to say that our teams at DIA are working really hard to quell the fires and to provide the support that is needed. At this point, it's just, I think, in crisis. And once the fires have been put out and they've dealt with the immediate need of all of the residents who've been displaced, we will then be in a better position to actually make an assessment of what is possible in terms of the department. I've agreed with my colleague. Yes.
Honourable members, as I have already indicated, the chair will join us later. The minister and the deputy minister, they have also apologised as well, so they will not be part of our meeting. And also, Mr. Force has also apologised as well. Those are the only apologies that we have received, honourable members, hoping that other members, once they are released in other committees, they will join us in the course of the meeting. Thank you, Chair. Oh, okay. I'm also receiving another one again. Mama Sehele has also sent her apology as well, honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi. You can continue.
Thank you very much, honourable chair. It's a long presentation, but I've agreed that in return for doing the presentation, my colleague Stephen will take all the questions at the end. the presentation and the outline, which is contained on slide 2, really it's to tell the story of coastal marine tourism, because it's the first time we're presenting it. We have been working in the space for a period of roughly 2 years now, but I think it's important to outline all of the processes that led to where we are and to provide some kind of a progress update. I won't speak to all of these, but I'll talk to them as I go through them. So, as the Honourable Chair has said,
Coastal marine tourism is part of Operation Pakisa. Initially, there were four areas that were the areas of focus. That was marine transport and manufacturing, offshore oil and gas, aquaculture, and marine protection services and ocean governance. What was then done in 2015 was that two focus areas were added. And the first focus area was, of course, coastal and marine tourism, and the second one is small harbors. Just to let you know, the small harbors are in fact only convening their labs this year. They're starting in the next few weeks. But the coastal and marine tourism lab basically took place in April and May of 2016, following that announcement. The lab itself is basically a very intense process. It is an in-house process where stakeholders that are from public and private sector actually stay at a venue for a period of roughly 8 weeks. And they literally every single day are working on developing these very detailed, what they call 3-feet plans, but they are in fact just very, very detailed plans, micro-level plans. The work that came out of the lab was actually a 600-page implementation plan. And it's literally a step-by-step plan for each of the projects that comes out of it. I think that in retrospect, we were wanting to run with our lab in compliance and also out of eagerness. But I think that in retrospect, what we would have done if we could do it differently was that we would have spent a year in planning, getting all of the background information and the research done before we actually ran the lab. Be that as it may, we then had to spend significant amount of time post-lab in gathering that information and actually double-checking and confirming the issues with all of the partners before we could present it to Cabinet. So the plan itself was presented and accepted by Cabinet then on the 16th of August 2017. The vision is a very simple one. It's really about looking at South Africa's competitive advantages in nature, culture, and heritage to actually grow coastal and marine tourism. And the target is really an estimated target of 21.4 billion direct contribution to GDP, and approximately doubling the number of jobs in the coastal and marine tourism sector to 116,000, and these are to 2026. The question we've often received is, why is this not aligned to the NDP, which is to 2030? And the reason that it isn't aligned is because one of the peculiarities of our sector is that we only have projections for how we estimate growth in our sector up to 2026. So we've basically used what was the real information on the ground, and that information comes directly from the World Tourism and Travel Council. So that's the reason it's up to 2026 and not up to 2030. But as soon as, of course, the projections get updated, we will update them. Essentially, we have decided in our approach, and there was a very serious process of refining projects and getting to the list that actually found their way into the documentation. And that process was to really say, we want to maximize the impact that we have in the work that we're doing as government and as the private sector. So instead of working in isolated products, we want to work where there is already some existing work and to build on it. Secondly, we want to strengthen the connectedness between the different precincts as they work. And although we're dealing with coastal and marine tourism, tourism, as you will know, honorable members, is not something that stops at the boundary of a beach. So the linkages, therefore, with what exists inland become an important priority for the work that is done in coastal and marine tourism. So although the focus is on the coastline, there are some projects, for example, that are inland, which actually help to connect the experience. In many spaces, you will know that township tourism, for example, is something that should be connected with the coastland experience. So if you come to Cape Town, you should be going to Khayelitsha. And so even though Khayelitsha isn't necessarily right on the waterfront beach, there is Monwabisi Beach down that way, and so that's the connection between them. So you are familiar with the 5 in 5 strategy of SA Tourism. We actually, for ease of reference, like to say that this is a 6 in 6 strategy. We have 6 nodal areas, and we have 6 focus areas. And essentially, the 6 nodal areas, they're 2 in KwaZulu-Natal, which is Durban and surrounds, Umkhanyagude, which includes Umhlabuya, Lingana, and surrounds. And there are 2 in the Eastern Cape, Port St. John's to Coffee Bay, East London, Port Elizabeth and surrounds. 1 in the Western Cape, which is Cape Town and surrounds. And then 1 in the Northern Cape, which is the West Coast and surrounds. The 6 thematic areas then are looking at marketing events and groups, how we deal with regulations and permitting, and this is largely related to boat-based whale watching, shark cage diving, and actually 4x4 rides on in protected areas. Research and spatial planning, beach precinct development, tourism infrastructure and tourism safety, marine tourism, and then of course the very critically important area of skills development. This diagram. So this is a graphical representation then of the 6 nodes, and you will see that it runs all the way down the coastline. And what then is in yellow is some of the focus areas, which I'll speak to in a little bit of detail down the line. And then the little blue and red dots are also spaces where we have other areas that coincide with us and also our blue flag beaches. This then slide, the next one, really shows the integration we have with a number of different Operation Pakisa areas of work. So there are little fish that are on the map, and I'm sorry if they're not easy to see, but that really is the aquaculture areas of work. And essentially this is important because the aquaculture links then with the supply side of tourism. We also have the priority transport projects, which essentially are the Clean Sea Airport, but at this point in time there's a feasibility study for the Northern Cape to look at which might be the best place to put an airport in the Northern Cape. And then, of course, we have the Durban Cruise Terminal and the Cape Town Cruise Terminal that are being implemented by our counterparts in Transnet.
That's correct, yes.
And then the kind of last area of work is really the links that we have made with the arts and culture sector. I think until there was a Tourism Pakisa, the team at Arts and Culture didn't really see a space for themselves within this. So this is really about linking creative industries as well as events to the work that we are doing. What we've tried to do with the next set of slides, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is to actually outline in a little bit more detail what the initiatives are in each of these nodal areas and what the opportunities are that we're exploring in partnership with a number of different departments. So the Back Centre Precinct is within the Durban Beachfront Precinct, and this is really a space that is for creative industries. So at the moment, the space exists, but it requires upgrades. It's a very popular space for artists within Durban space. And we've been working with the team at Arts and Culture and also in KwaZulu-Natal to work on the upgrades of that specific center and to also look at what opportunities might exist for us to bring in, for example, our chefs program to run restaurant facilities, etc., within that space. The next set of projects is the Durban Cruise Terminal. As we say, this is already something that has been approved by Transnet and work that is currently under construction. I understand that where it is at this point is that it has gone out to tender, And what we're exploring then with our colleagues is how we make the space broader than just a space for vehicles to berth, how it becomes a space then that can be utilized for tourism purposes, where we can create kiosks for artists to sell their wares, where we can also create spaces for restaurants, etc., and how we bring in our expanded public works program and the team that works on that to be skilled. The Africa Fashion Expo is, of course, a project that is supported by the city and by the province. And this, again, represents the opportunity to link not just the coast, but there is a whole cultural center that is around fashion that's being set up within within Durban. So it's linking the project, which is an Africa fashion show, with a much bigger hub. So what we're exploring, for example, is if members have traveled across to, for example, India or to China, you can quite easily get an outfit made literally overnight. And that's one of the things that's being explored by the creation of this whole fashion center within Durban and how that actually supports the broader tourism space. The Naughty Beach is a community-owned project, and at present, the obstacle to development is an approval. So there is an old legislation called Act 70 of 70. It affects both Nonoti and it affects Nkambati. The act is intention is to protect agriculturally productive land, which is critically important because we don't have a very large percentage of agriculturally productive land in the country. So Nonoti falls within that zoning as an agricultural piece of land, but the act actually doesn't prescribe the footprint of development and also the number of developments. The Department of Agriculture has in their policy framework said that there can't be more than 10% footprint developed, so not more than that, and also they won't grant concessions on this piece of land for more than 10 years. So this is an obstacle to actually allowing the development to take place at Nonoti. It would be the largest and the first coastal resort development in the country. So we've been working with the Department of Agriculture to do both things, responsibly protect agricultural land, but also unlock this development for the community. And it has, at this point in time, I think is at the ministerial level that there are discussions about how this can be unlocked. Goldbase whale watching, I think it's a common theme, and the sites there are actually Durban and Shelly Beach. Here, of course, our counterparts at DEA issue the licenses, and we actually support new entrepreneurs to assist them to find the funding and to actually run the businesses. So that work is being done through our SMME team. Isimangaliso, of course, has 43 different projects that they are wanting to implement. And it's the work that they're doing in their space also links to the work being done in Umhlabuya Lingana and Umkhanyagude district municipality. So those projects range in nature from accommodation type facilities to different activities, and the work that we're doing is to support the team to actually get the funding to make that those projects a reality. Banga Neck is one of those camps that is up in the Umkhanyagude district area, and we are currently funding the upgrade of those community-owned camps. And then, of course, again, boat-based whale watching, which is Richards Bay, St. Lucia, and Sodwana Bay. In the Eastern Cape, we are very delighted to say that Nkambati had the same challenges around Act 70 of 70. But in working with our teams at agriculture, we have unlocked that development, which sadly has been stuck for the last almost 20 years. And they are currently actually finalizing all of their plans and will soon break ground for a very large development on this community-owned land. It's 150 million rand worth of investment that will then be made in the establishment of accommodation facilities and a whole host of different tourism offerings. And the structure of that is, of course, that the benefits of that go directly to the community. Port St. John's to Coffee Bay, we are, of course, working on a master plan. Our teams are, in fact, there tomorrow. So this is really about a plan that will look at the sensitivity of that area, look at how tourism actually supports it, and build a long-term plan for the implementation of it. I think one of the things about the Eastern Cape is that there are many plans, but one of the challenges with the plans has been that they haven't been linked to a strategy to get the funds to make those plans happen. So the work that we're doing on the master planning is very important because it's consolidating a number of plans for the Wild Coast region, but most importantly, it's actually then working on the aspect of finding funding to make those projects a reality. And that, of course, is something that doesn't happen necessarily very quickly. So the master plan process is envisaged to be, the draft ones will be done by the end of the year. But we have teams working in parallel on projects. So some of the work that we've been doing for the investment conference that was recently hosted by President Ramaphosa is, in fact, to actually work with the IDC teams on how we actually package the projects that we currently have. And some of those actually, one of them is a hole-in-the-wall project, which is along this region. So although we are working on master planning, there is already advanced work that is happening on projects that are ready to go and to find the funding to make those a reality. And then, of course, linked with the Port St. John's work is the feasibility study for the Port St. John's waterfront. So this is really also linking in with the work that's being done on small harbour development in that area, and as well as the beachfront development. So in Port St. John's, I would say, honourable members, watch the space. I think in the next few years that space will be transformed, and the potential that is real tourism potential within that space will be maximised. Ising Isethu is, of course, a cultural festival that currently takes place in Port St. John's. At the moment, it is an event that is quite a local event. So it's people of the Eastern Cape. But what we have been doing, working with our team at Arts and Culture, is to continuously grow this event. So last year we supported with the infrastructure supported the event, and also some of the event management. But it's working with the province to actually get this event numbers to grow year on year and to also professionalize the event. So we envisage in years to come that it will become something like the Grahamstown Festival, something that is well known, that is very popular, and that attracts many people. So it's part of a broader event strategy. Boat-based whale watching I won't speak to, but, of course, we're also working in the Duesa Kwebe Nature Reserve, and we're at the moment funding some of the upgrades in that space on universal accessibility, but also on interpretive signage. The six-day hiking trail is very exciting. We completed phase one of that project between Port St. John's and Coffee Bay, and we are presently working on phase two of the project, which is really to build more facilities along that. The six-day hiking trail actually traverses three municipal areas and actually five tribal authorities. And so this work is really very linked in with assets that are owned by the community. And along that space, we're also doing, of course, our skills development work on guiding, on chef training, so that once all of these facilities are up and running, that the communities are actually running those businesses along that space. And then, of course, we're doing beach infrastructure upgrades on Blue Flag beaches and other beaches within the space so that they can become more usable for, firstly, domestic tourists. The East London Esplanade and relocation of the aquarium, I'll speak a little bit to where they are at the moment, but these are projects that are currently underway, and they were put forward to us by the province, and they seem to be making very good progress on these projects. Port Elizabeth and East London cruise terminal was turned down, actually, by Transnet. It might be in the next iteration. I think it has to do with how much they cost, but that was part of the initial plans that were in the space. So at Elephant Park, it might seem strange that it appears in a coastal and marine tourism area of work, but it is one of the key attractions that is on the edge of a coastal city. And what we're doing there is we're actually funding the upgrade of the accommodation facilities. So it's a day trip. It allows people to come from the coast and experience something fundamentally different. And so that's the linkages that we've been making with coastal and marine tourism, with other areas of work. Sitsikama Big Tree is the same example. Because what we want to do, of course, is to encourage people to travel along the coastline. But you also want to encourage them to get off the coastline and explore things that are very close to the coastline. Okay, shark cage diving and boat-based whale watching I've already spoken to, and you'll see that it's repeated. Within the Western Cape, we, of course, are working with the waterfront team on the Cape Town Cruise Terminal. That work has already been awarded, I think, to the waterfront by Transnet. They will manage it. But we've been talking to them about how we actually link in. There's a big industry around luxury yachts. People park luxury yachts, and they park them in harbors for a while, and they hire staff, and they may or may not actually come. But the benefit of it is that you actually have, if the ratio is something like 6 people to 1 visitor on a luxury yacht. So we've been talking to them about how we actually coincide the work around luxury yachts, but also around boat building, and how that factors in with the work that we are doing around creating these spaces so that they are multi-purpose spaces. Kokama Nature Reserve, of course, after the devastating fires in Knysna last year, this is one of the projects that we were supporting in terms of universal accessibility. So it's building facilities within Kokama that actually are supporting people with disabilities, and older people and children. So Khayelitsha Precinct is one that we are quite excited about, and we're in fact doing the work around the precinct development. So this is really around how you link the Lookout Hill and potential developments around Monwabisi Beach. And the work at this point is at a planning stage and in discussions with the province on how it actually moves forward. I've spoken to these two, and I won't speak to this. And then the Volvo Ocean Race was something that the City of Cape Town in fact had for 3 years, so you have to bid on something like this. Last year was the last year of their first 3-year contract. It puts us on the map of this massive race. The city, I think, is still trying to determine whether they want to bid for it again. But we think that it's unlikely that Cape Town will fall off as a lake on the Volvo Oceans race. And then in the Northern Cape, we are doing work on developing a master plan for Hondatapai to Port Nolloth, and also development of a master plan for the Orange River Mouth. So there are existing facilities, some of them in disrepair, quite popular, I'm told, with local tourists, but it's really about how we can develop this space holistically, and that work is being directly managed by the department. And then, of course, the Honda Cliff Bay and McDougall's Bay campsites, also in need of repair, and it's upgrading. So in the work that we're doing there, it's to see how we can develop plans that can be used later on. But part of all of this work is, of course, then also to link with things like the flower tours to the Namakwa National Park, because there are already existing things that attract visitors. Now it's about creating additional product that entices them to do more than just the one thing that they usually come to do. We are then also working with the province on looking at which would be the best space to put an airport, because one of the challenges with the Northern Cape, Honourable Member Adams, you will know, is accessing it. And so there is a need for an airport, but the location of where that should be is important. Initially, the idea was Clane Sier, but there's been different thinkings about it. So we've been working with transport and with the province to actually look at where that might be best placed. And then, of course, we've been working on the Clayneshere Beach Precinct and its concept development for that. But in all the work that we're doing around concept development, it also is looking at how you make these projects bankable and how you're actually enticing funders to make them a reality. So even though it appears as if it's planning work, it's actually much more than planning work. It's planning work in order to secure the funding in order to actually make those projects a reality. And then if we look at the cross-cutting initiatives, the first one is really around our marketing efforts, and that's around the Indian Atlantic route. So I'll speak a little bit to that down the line. There are already existing routes, and the intention is not to get rid of those existing routes. The intention is to support those existing routes, but to actually assist them to work together so that you have a coordinated effort around marketing on the coastline. And then through our Blue Flag Beach program, we are upgrading several of our sites along the beach precincts. But the projects that I spoke to that are infrastructure in nature and have a public role, we've also been actually working on an investment perspective to actually sell them at various platforms and to actually find the funding for them to happen. The permitting regulations, as I said, largely relate to the shark cage diving and boat-based whale watching. And DEA at the moment is also looking at how they can allow, in certain areas, 4x4 driving. At some point in time, it was banned because there was destruction of sensitive areas. So DEA has been looking at the sites have been rehabilitated. How do you actually then, where would it make sense to allow it? And if you allow it, it's not allowing private individuals to take their vehicles there. It's also about creating new enterprises that actually take people out on these drives. Those people then would be aware of what the sensitivities are. So at this point, the DEA team has done a desktop study. They're looking at best practice. And when eventually they're done with the process, they will in fact promulgate it. The research work that we've done in coastal and marine tourism is to look at the economic impact of tourism. It's the first year they've developed a framework for us, UKZN. The second year is actually looking at the numbers and how you actually put them together. And then the second one is looking at governance and coordination of this. So it's been very exciting work with the universities because it is a new area, and even globally, you know, there's some places that do it really well, but it's an interesting new area for many, many countries in the world. And then skills development, we've been working with SAMHSA to look at the specific skills related to the coastal and marine tourism. SAMHSA is actually the organization responsible for this, for the whole oceans economy. And then, of course, we've been working with the CATSETA to look at how we develop that. And, of course, we've been looking at the value chain. So our link with aquaculture, the work we're doing with agriculture, is around how you actually supply the products that you actually develop and what opportunities you can create, linking agriculture, aquaculture with tourism. Okay, so in the Atlantic route, essentially, it's at this point in time, it includes all of the towns along the coastline. And at the moment, it will soon be ready to be released, a 357-page document that has basically done the following things. It has mapped out the exact supply that exists along our coastline. And that's looking at all of the routes, it's all of the products, attractions, it's looking at access issues, it's looking at roads, it's looking at signage. They've also then mapped for each of those spaces along the coastline the demand analysis. So what is it that people want from that specific experience? They've mapped out then what needs to be done from a marketing and promotion perspective. Also what needs to be done from a product perspective for each of the areas, and then what are the governance issues that need to be dealt with. The work was benchmarked against work that's been done across the world. So in terms of growing this economy, we know that one of the challenges that we have is really about capital investment. And we have been working with new entrants to actually look at how we can get the funding to get the businesses off the ground, particularly in the space that is around boat-based whale watching and white shark cage diving. We've also been looking at how we can use the work that's been done by small harbors to create a new set of businesses. So small harbors will run their lab soon. We're a part of that lab. And there are many opportunities in small harbors to create businesses that are along that space. So once the small harbors report comes out, we will then, of course, have the tourism elements integrated within their work. And we're also, of course, expanding our incubation program within the department to support the SMME developments. We are also then taking our skills development programs, the EPWP programs, where we've trained young chefs, for example, to look at how we can now assist them to set up the businesses. And linking that then with the work that is happening at the harbors and the cruise terminals. So it's using the opportunities that are coming from this to actually deal with that. And then where we know that there's infrastructure development, we are also linking the supply chains so that the fresh produce, the laundry facilities, et cetera, that actually are needed by those businesses actually then get taken up by small businesses along the space. While we were doing this, we found that there are many other initiatives that are taking place, and I've spoken to the harbors, so I won't talk to them. But in Port Elizabeth, there is the Buchans Valley Precinct. It's a 4 billion rand investment by the private sector. The Durban Point Waterfront is a 35 billion rand investment. So the coastal and marine tourism actually reports on both public and private sector investments. There's Blythedale, I think on the north coast of KwaZulu-Natal. It's a 15 billion rand investment, which is already being made. And then, of course, Sons invested 680 million in 500 new units in Cape Town. And Isimangaliso, I think I've already spoken to. Institutional arrangements around Operation Pakisa, it's very structured. So there is a presidential oversight committee. There's a ministerial committee that used to be headed, of course, by Minister Molewa, now headed by Minister Hanekom. And essentially what happens is that all of the delivery units report in to a ministerial manco. Reporting on Operation Pakisa happens on a monthly basis. So we report in to the Department of DPME, Monitoring and Evaluation, and they are the custodians then of the reporting, which then feeds into the reporting that goes to the ministerial manco. And, of course, there is a committee, that a local coordinating committee, where all of the teams that are involved in Operation Pakisa, there's a monthly meeting where they work with each other to support each other. But each different unit has their own meetings where they coordinate and consolidate. So it's very it's a very intensive process. I won't talk to this because I've already spoken to the institutional arrangements, but I think that where are we in terms of our targets for up to 2026? So we have a set of government initiatives, and those initiatives have invested over the last while 164 million, just over that, over the last 3 years. Yes, it should actually be three zeros and not the million that is written in that way. Quite right. And the jobs that have been created are, am I correct, Stephen? 1,189. The private sector has actually invested 112 billion in the various initiatives that they are doing. And an important thing about Operation Pakisa is we are tracking both public and private sector investments in specific initiatives. And then the jobs that are projected are really 71,000 full-time and 153,000 part-time. So we're making progress towards those targets, and we will know better at the end where we are, but it's significant progress. Also further progress is the projects that the department itself is investing. And the department over the next 3 years is spending roughly 116 million rand on these sets of projects. I've spoken to some of them. I won't go through them. But the investment is in infrastructure. The investment is in planning. And the investment is in our skills development programs. I've spoken about Mkambati, and I've also, I think, spoken about Nanoti Beach. So we've unlocked Mkambati, but Nanoti Beach remains something that we will unlock. When that's done, if the estimated development is 2.5 billion. The East London beachfront and the Esplanade, the concept plans have been completed. The town applications, town planning applications have been done. EIAs are underway, and we're anticipating that all of those, in fact, the detailed plans were completed in October 2018. The relocation of the aquarium, the bid processes are underway to relocate that. And the Volvo Ocean Race and Isetu, I've already spoken to. In terms of boat-based whale watching and shark cage diving, DEA has, of course, issued new permits. They were issued last year. And there are we're working then, of course, with new entrants around this area of work. I've spoken to the two research studies that we're doing with UKZN, and I've spoken to the draft demand and supply analysis. I wanted to just give you an example of what the work is that's been done in the Atlantic route. So if you look again at the visual picture, the work that's been done along the coastline, they have now also got six nodes, and they've divided it up logically because already there are existing DMOs that are working in the area, and already there are linkages. For each of those, they've defined what the key aspect is that drives tourists there. So for Cozy Bay to Durban, for example, safari, scenic beauty, active adventure and culture are the things that drive demand in that area. And what I have then done, because I didn't want to present everything, was to take the example of Durban to Port Edward and outline for you what has been done. So for each of them, there has been an outline of what the current visitation is, what the main markets are, what is the average length of stay, and what kind of activities do those visitors actually want to participate in. They've also looked at then where the money goes. So where do visitors currently spend their money in this specific area, and what are the key source markets, because this is telling us about the current demand, and in order to grow the demand, these are very important aspects. This is slide 41. If we go to the next slide, what has then been done for each of those six areas along the coastline is to explain what the current governance issues are, which municipality currently runs the marketing organizations, what some of the membership challenges are, and what kind of route marketing currently exists. This is why it's a 357-page document. Then what it has then done further is to say, if we are in fact going to expand the work that needs to be done here, grow new enterprises, and do skills development, what are the types of skills, given that we now understand what the demand is, that needs to be done for this space? And what we then have is a very detailed plan that looks at actual projects that are about product development, actual projects within the marketing space along with their costing, and then what kind of stakeholder management and fundraising we need to put in place, and what types of skills development initiatives we need to invest in. This has been done for that entire coastline. So we now have a complete picture of the supply in that area, what the demand is for the experience, what the gap is between the supply and demand, and then a plan that needs to be implemented now to do product development, marketing, support the DMOs in that space, and to do the skills development. This is my very last slide, and then I'm going to hand over to Stephen. It's always the challenge of our sector, it's also the beauty of our sector. Our sector is about integration and about partnerships. And the plans that we have put into the coastal and marine tourism, Operation Takisa, are not just our plans. They're plans that come from the private sector, they come from the provinces. So any changes that we make to these plans has to be a process that is consulted and agreed to with multiple parties and multiple stakeholders. The role that the department then plays is, of course, to make sure that the projects we are in control of move and they move quickly. The second role that we play is to unblock any obstacles that might come to the development in projects that are either public or private sector, but they don't necessarily fall within our mandate, so we unblock those. The third thing that we are doing is to really support further investment into the space and to grow new businesses. So that in detail is the plan itself. It was quite useful to see it in this way, because I think for those of us who work on the ground, the scope of it is not always obvious when you're working on specific projects. But it's quite a wide scope of work, and the team that we have working on it is really committed. The one of our colleagues who actually runs the program, Mr. Dlamini, is not able to be here today because he actually is in Umhlabuyeni and in Ghana. There were some challenges, so he's unblocking those challenges in that space. So generally, I think we move as quickly as we can with it. When we actually, in other areas of work, so for example, aquaculture, it's a little bit easier to manage aquaculture because the department's completely in control of where the aquaculture farms are and actually setting them up. This one is a little bit different because it actually is multiple partners, multiple sectors, and we work in collaboration with a number of people. I think, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, with that, I will end.
Thank you very much, Acting DG, for your presentation, and welcome to the Honourable Pam Mkwenya. We are glad that you made it to here. So, members, it's open for questions now. I recognize the Honourable Yekwa, the Honourable Strombok, the Honourable Seko, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me take this opportunity, Chair, through you to welcome the presentation from the Acting DG. A well-informed presentation, but I've just got one question. What makes the department to change their mind? Because previously there was an indication from the department they are not in favor of this cruise tourism. But, Chair, as a government, we always make sure that in our policy that says we economic transformation, radical economic transformation, we always looking at a space where our people, especially the very poor people. I'm happy that in your presentation you mentioned the nodal presenter's nodal point, which is in Sabyalingana, which is not, that is not the only place with the presidential nodal point, but I'm happy that you mentioned that. But while we are presenting, I was listed a lot of questions here, but some of them has been answered because I was looking at the proper planning to accommodate those people that are living in those surroundings, especially those that are at disadvantage. You see, I don't agree with the thinking of that our people must just go there and organize when the tourists come or whoever comes, they just sell on their own. But they should be put in a structure where they are recognized and they are trained to giving, especially the poor people in the Mhlabuyeni. So while you were presenting, my question were covered because I think you got that proper planning. How are you going to train them? You identify all the areas, the critical areas. That is why I'm saying I was very impressed with your presentation, hoping that it will work for the benefit of our people. Because that is the challenge when you know, DG, when you've got this big project, it only benefit those that benefited before, because there is no structure that is directly dealing with the poor people. So I'm happy with this. We'll do a follow-up, but I'm happy with the presentation. It tells me that it will accommodate our people. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I apologize if the questions I asked were covered just before I got there. I'm not entirely clear exactly what the department's role is in this very impressive plan to develop our coastline tourism offering. I mean, it's a very, very interesting and very exciting presentation when you see what's happening. So it's alluded to where you say somewhere, I can't remember exactly where in the presentation, that it's more facilitated role to make these things happen. There's a number of references to billions being invested in this beachfront or that hotel development. Clearly that's other stakeholders. And I would imagine then that what your role is to pull the various departments together, various stakeholders together, and make sure that things happen more smoothly or perhaps happen at all. But could you just expand on that a little bit so I can get a better feel as to what precisely the facilitative role, if that's what it is, entails? Then on page 34, am I right in thinking that all these nodes that you develop and the different types of initiatives up and down the coastline, that's what you mean when you say 164 million, right? So the first bullet. So are these, I think it's six different nodes, is that right? Yeah. Are the six nodes the work that tourism is doing in those six different nodes, does that collectively come to the 164 million rand over 3 years? And if it is so, then I think it might be helpful if you could, against each project, let's take any page around page 20, Khayelitsha, Lookout Hill, for example. You talk about opportunities. That's what could be achieved, for example. I'm not quite sure what the cost to that particular project is. What would you be spending on to realize those opportunities? So if we could perhaps break it down into node and within each project, we could get an idea of what the financial contribution and opportunity cost is for tourism to leverage each one of these projects up. Okay, then back to page 34. It's actually quite interesting because I take it the third bullet where it says current projected private sector investment, 112.722 billion. I think that's the same problem as the first one. I think it's 112.7 billion, right? There's a comma missing there. Now, if you look at that, and you compare that to what you estimate the government's going to be putting in, which I take is all from DOT, it's 686 times as much money. So, I mean, what DOT is investing is a tiny, tiny fraction of what it is. It's less than 0.1%. And that's intriguing because it seems as if a tiny little catalyst, what you're implying, a tiny little catalyst being the department, by spending a relatively small amount, can then get private sector spending to be leveraged up by a factor of nearly 700. And that's a remarkable kind of investment for such a small amount to get such a lot of activity. So are those figures actually accurate? Because those are fantastic odds, okay? On the jobs, if you take what your investment is of 164 million over 3 years and the jobs you're creating, it works out to about 138,000 rand a job. That's what it's going to cost the taxpayer to create that job. How does that benchmark against other industry standards? And my last question is also find very intriguing. Because if you look at what you're projecting the private sector is going to invest, and you take the number of jobs created there, you add the part-time and full-time jobs together. Although the private sector, according to investments, according to these figures, is spending 686 times as much, it's only getting 189 times more jobs. The implication is almost that it's a whole lot less efficient, and in fact it's just over R500,000 to create a job. Now, their money, so that's fine. We don't have a say over that, and we shouldn't. It's their choice if they want to make that investment. But some other figures don't seem to add up. Normally the private sector is much more efficient at creating jobs, which is why we have a mixed economy in this country, but there is a considerable role given by the current government to the role of the private sector in creating job opportunities in the country. Why is it so much more expensive, in your opinion? Right, so the question, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think let me first say it was a good decision for this committee to say they must come and make a presentation around Operation Pakistan, because they are here as per our request as a committee. I must also put it that the presentation is in informative and also straightforward, but it makes one to ask some questions. Though some have been answered already, because I was to ask the issue of about the issue of their involvement and also how they work with provinces. She has outlined that their planning is informed by the provincial planning, so they are making a master plan to attract investment. Around that issue of investment, I am tempted to ask, how do you make sure that the communities that are near the coastal area do not just benefit by just working there? They also have stake in the development, because you said your investment is around infrastructure, around planning, around skills development. How do you, in your investment, mainstream the issue of transformation? Because we must not isolate this thing of transformation. We act, and then we say, how about transforming the industry? How do we make sure that we mainstream that the concept of transformation? How do you also make sure that the community initiatives there take advantage of even your transformation fund? You assist them such that they understand that in this Operation Pakistan they can benefit. I am also tempted to check if you take note of the land that is under clean, so that you don't develop where there's gonna be some conflicts around land claims. There are also developments, the establishments around the coast that are owned by those that were aware before. How to make sure that the PDI, the previously disadvantaged individuals, take opportunity of being there nearer the coast? Lastly, you have this plan. How to make sure that as a committee, we have this plan at last, so that we are able to do oversight? Coming to the issue of Blue Flag status, who are your other partners to make sure that the beaches that obtained this blue flag status maintain that status. I'm thinking of provinces like KZN in Durban, where you may end up having two beaches that have blue flag status, two under pilot. There were 10 before. Who are other role players so that we understand? Because when you talk, when someone goes to, plans to have a holiday in Durban, he must not say, I cannot go to this beach because this one does not have this status. How to make sure that all the beaches there, if they once obtained the status, they maintain the very status that they had before. I'm very glad when you stressed the issue of skills development, but the thing there is that we need skills that are accredited. We are gone at the days where we were glad just to be able to do something. We need skills for our people so that they can be employed, they can be placed, they can be not just ordinary skills. There are those developments that are unfinished establishments, like where the minister visited Kajwa in Elodale, in Mbashe municipality. The minister was there on the World Tourism Day, I think so. We like the integrated approach that, how he approached the visit to that, because there was himself, there was the MEC concerned, there was the mayor, there was the chief, the whoever. But how to make sure that the area that he visited is addressed, because there's a unfinished establishment in Kajwa there. I think it's also a community initiative. And also, Chair, the issue of, I cannot overemphasize the issue of transformation, because there are those that were there before. At least we must take opportunity as people who are in the coastal area, people who are, people, because if you talk private investors, you talk of a person who may be coming from Johannesburg to the area of Kajo. He or she advantages himself. The people there will just clap and sing for him. He takes whatever that is there and go back to. What we are interested in is ownership, involvement, and stake also. I think, Chairperson, this presentation will assist us a lot. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, for giving me this opportunity, even if I've come so late, and I do apologize for that. It's one of those things where you find that the aircrafts are controlled by the unions, and then there are no flights. So, but somehow we managed to move around. That's why we are late. Chairperson, I may go at a tangent, or maybe repeating things that have been spoken of because of my late entrance. But although I haven't heard the presentation itself in its totality, but I do have some reserved questions. The members have talked about transformation. I am particularly interested in the area between Port Edward and East London, the underdevelopment. You are talking here of a harbour. This thing we have heard of from the Matanzima days. It is still in our lips. I don't know how, after 20 so many years, we are still talking about this thing, and there has been no implementation. because it is promising people of a heaven they don't even know about. Number two, there is no aquarium between East London and Port Edo and Durban, and yet that coast is a very vast coast. Also, in that area, so much can be done. There is so much of ornamental fishes that the people from all over, especially from the Coffee Bay area, where people come in to make merry of themselves and take everything out. And again, you find our people being used for diving and getting these, and they dispose of them at no cost at all. And it comes to training again and exposing people to what is available and what they can do. I don't understand this skilling, how far it goes, because you go there, you find that people are taught just diving and life-saving, and yet the sharks are eating people like nobody's business in those areas. What preventative methods are being implemented to get those nets from sharks spot in Durban to prevent people being made a meal of by the sharks? Also, the roads going to these coastal areas, I'm talking in particular of the Transkei area, the roads are awful. If you take your car there, you are definitely going to have a huge mechanical problem. Also, there is a good, huge project, an aquaculture project, that is going on around the Mdumbi River. That was structured so that the people who are doing geology should go there. The roads are impassable. And the tourists do want to go there because the area is a beautiful area, but the roads are unbelievable. We have managed to talk to the Nyandeni municipality, but because those people are not conscientized as to what tourism is all about, what their responsibilities are all about, that those cries are falling into deaf ears. You find that those people, even in their plans, they don't have tourism as something they should look into. You have got Mthatha. It is the most, it is one of those areas which, in fact, would create a lot of tourism streaming into the area because of Madiba's presence in the area. The town is filthy. Everything is falling to bits. No roads within the town. And it looks like there is no coordination between tourism and roads and the municipality itself. I don't know. I'm being very, you know, I'm personalizing this because those are the areas I feel tourism will boom in there. You get an airport which has no viewing area. You find something which is very, you know, shameful. When it rains, these kids who come to see the aeroplanes, they stand in the cold. They are little things like this. They keep on shivering. Right in the open air, there was money that was allocated for that airport, but again, it went haywire. I don't know whether the Gupta's were there, but I'm not sure, I don't know. But the airport was not sufficiently provided for with things that improve the area. There should be a viewing area for particularly in that area. Children are always taken onto the airport to go and see the aeroplane. When it rains, they are drenched to the skin because there is no shelter. Please let us make sure that whoever is responsible, we make them do their work. The land issues, that has been land claim issues, that has also been addressed. Again, there is this huge dam in Mthatha around which there was a tourism thing, world tourism. Oh, we were there together, yes. That place, so much can be done to it.
But because tourism is not anything there, you find people doing beadwork. Even the beadwork that was created doesn't come from there. You source people from East London, King Williamstown, and so on, to converge there and make it look like it is the local people. There is nothing for those people to do, and yet there is so much. I don't know what we can do to make those people in these areas, especially the tourism lucrative areas, to wake up and do something. I don't know what can be done, but all those areas are failing tourism. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nkomo. Thank you very much, Chairperson. May I thank the ACNC for the input. Chairperson, firstly, I would like to address a matter which I'm aware that in the slides, it could not be detailed, but it needs a bit of some detail on its own. I think there's a part here which we're given where there's a bike hike or something, where they go across, I think, 6 municipalities and 5 chiefs or something, or did you say tribal leaders, I don't know what you call them. Chairperson, I would just like to remind all of us of one thing. You see, we found all these places, all these sites which we're talking about because the traditional leaders took care of them all along. But I'm not too comfortable with how they are brought in on matters. They seem to be brought in by the by. I would like to find out exactly what role do they play. Because it could be a tourism site, it could be whatever these areas are, it could be in Umkhanyakude. We found those places because they were taken care of right throughout centuries by traditional leaders, of which they are still doing up to today. So the role of the traditional leaders in this regard is very important to us as an African people, as a people. Secondly, the issue of capacity building. I'm particularly concerned, especially with the rural areas, specifically, taking care of the urban areas, but presently I would just like to address the rural areas. What type of capacity building is given to the people there so that there is continuous type of learning that happens, as well as the ownership of programs as has been described by my colleagues? I think some of my colleagues here, they've spoken about the diving and everything else which is actually being given to people in those areas. What else is being done so that our people can even compete at national level or at international level from these very projects? Lastly, Chairperson, it is of interest to all of us to get an understanding of how we are getting an impact, or we are having an impact, on poverty, on unemployment, as well as, you know, some of those scourges which have been going on and on, so that through these very projects, through the monies which we are using from ordinary people, we can actually state that annually we have cut down on unemployment by this percentage. That is quite important to ourselves as well as to the people in our country. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members, for a basket of questions. We are now at 2 o'clock. I would like to ask the acting DDG if there isn't enough time to answer all the questions, that we finish by 2:45 for the members to return to us, and that you will give the other answers in writing. I would just like to make the following comment. It seems to me, in some cases, we want to reinvent the wheel. As international best practices. You see, at my age, over 60, we want to have things that things that happen now. It must have happened yesterday. So I would like some timelines. Projection. When will it be implemented? Second thing. I think you should put Durban and Cape Town at number 6 and push Eastern Cape, Northern Cape to the front. Third thing, skills development. It's too vast to say skills development. Look at the destination and say to us in Coffin Brava, we want to do this. And we want to do this, and this is what we are going to do to make that destination unique. And then, DG, I don't know about the other provinces, I'm not so familiarized with them, but in Port Norris, our people, the indigenous people, is staying on the beachfront, where they consulted. And how is the development going to have a positive influence on them? And please, I know you said there will be a skills audit. Is it necessary when we can look at international veterans? We want to have the things happen now. Thank you.
It's just to expand on some of the issues that were raised by members. Where maybe, because there was a question as to what is your role. So I'm just looking at the things where maybe there might be a direct role rather than just facilitation. For example, when I remember talking about development of Mthatha Dam, then you are also talking about the Sakwebe, you are talking about at Elephant Park. So there is an issue that we have, the committee has raised with the department before of the PPP toolkit. We are looking specifically around areas, the conservation areas. And there was a meeting the committee had with National Treasury. And they said money could be unlocked if the department would come up with plans to say what can be done in those communities. So I think that you can have a direct role if you were to work closely with National Treasury to look at that PP Toolkit 2005 in terms of what can be done. Because you might find that you are unlocking funding from which will be like new money for the sector if we then get plans and concessions around that. The second issue is if we look at like the Mkanyagu area, I'm not sure, maybe the details is that thick document that we don't have sight of. Because if you look at implementation projects that are there, for example, you're talking Banganeg, then you're talking to like soft skills. The committee will recall when we had an oversight case at N and we went to Kula Village and we met those communities. They said there were concessions, I think there were about 11 of them, that were ring-fenced by Simangaliso for communities. So those were big projects, like people who could operate boats for whale watching and so on. But they said before those concessions could be given to communities, people had to verify to say they had about, for example, 1.5 million before the concession could be given. And no one within the community had that money, so the concessions were taken back to private operators. So I think that is another area there where the department can have like an active role in unlocking those, because when the licenses come to an end, like Ismangaliso will advertise those concessions. And if they use the very same process of ring-fencing this, and there is money needed for communities, new players to come in, then I think the department can have a direct role there. Maybe through the transformation fund that the member was talking about, to say we are then buying, because they were saying these are custom-made boats that will have to take people. So you need to have money before you can be given the concern. So I think that those are areas where the department can also play a role. Another issue, Chair, if you talk diving, the plan talks only of like shark cave diving, but this very same area around Sodwana Bay, you have coral reef diving, which is like huge in the Southern Hemisphere. It's like one of the best in the Southern Hemisphere. And there you find that you already have operators of in diving, and you have people who are like skippers who are driving these boats and so on, but they are not owners of those boats. So maybe also, I'm not sure, maybe the details are in the bigger plan, but if you look at in terms of the implementation program, there is nothing that talks to that diving where people will go and look at coral reefs and so on and so on. But I think in terms of skills audit that's going to be conducted, or skills training, we also need to look at like marine guides. Mm-hmm. Because now if we say people will be introducing whale watching and so on, you need people who are going to be telling people about the behavior of these whales and why are they migrating and so on, which is a new skill that is resting with a few people. So I think also issues of guiding, maybe working with CACITA to say, let's bring these new skills in terms of marine tour guides and so on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I'm going to allow my colleague to respond to some of them, and then I will take the rest of them.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, I'm going to try, and my boss will nudge me if I say something out of turn here. I think the first thing is, one, the Constitution gives tourism to all three levels of government, without giving national government a prerogative to go into the local area. So it's difficult for us to just go into an area. For example, a SDF, we could not do. An SDF, we could not do. So the spatial development framework, where you need to allocate and do zoning, it's not government, it's not a national government, especially not tourism. And then the IDP, where the integrated development planning. I just come from the Western Cape, where I was participating in, they invited us to sit in the Oceans Economy Working Group. Often we are told that tourism is not it's an unfunded mandate. So at local level, tourism has to fight, and often, even if they put plans forward, they don't get the money. If you look at the kind of budget we do get, I think some of the questions around the jobs and the ratios of the jobs, it's really EPWP money that we would spend, and then there's some other budget where we would, and it's often on heritage where there's market failure, where either province or the private sector will not get involved in development, but such a development would then be an anchor for private sector opportunity that will then materialize, and without which then the private sector stuff would not materialize. So there's the difficulty. So in this plan, in all of the work we do, not just ocean, the coastal marine, we have to work very closely with provinces. The projects that were put forward came from municipalities and provinces in the lab. There was a set of criteria that was agreed in the lab, where it was asked, is there a feasibility study? Is there money? Because there's no further money that was being pledged for any of this. And in any of the other plans, whether it's a SIP or anything else, there's no further money that is given. It must come from within your funds. Now, I mean, not a Department of Water Affairs, for example, that has budget to implement water or roads or others. So this is the sort of, I wouldn't say this attention that we live with and we then have to work through. The other is that, for example, roads is not our competence. Even if it were the kind of budget we have, we would not be able to implement one road. So where we do get requests for EPWP funding, for example, there's also a tension, there's always a tension. We had one at between Uppington and Kimberley, the Witsan Reserve, which is fairly unique. The road that is required sits outside of the park. So is it something that tourism does, or does it come? And the request came from the Northern Cape Economic Development Agency with plans, the detail for how much it would cost, all the specs, but we were not able to release that money. So this is always something that we have to then live with. At the time of the lab, there was also not a concept of a pipeline. So those that didn't get through were then didn't go through into the plan. We then went through a process where we did a round of consultation and started putting stuff into. So the master plan work that you see, that is the first step, for example, between Honda Tupai and McDougall's Bay in Northern Cape, Nola. There are plans there, but they come across as bit piece. We're not sure. It sounds like one big elephant that you want to eat in one bite. We then made available funds from within the department in our budget to do the master plan. So Northern Cape, we prioritized because there's nothing really in the Northern Cape. And then the Eastern Cape as well. There was nothing really in there that had come through. I think it was only the small harbour. And even that small harbour, we're not getting a sense of that. What would it be good for? What will it unlock? Is it viable? What would make it viable? We then prioritized those two regions as the economically most impoverished, least served, least visited, to look at the master plans. So, and this is not to start plans from ground up, to look at what plans are there, to develop a roadmap, what first, what role for each. So if we identify that road is a big infrastructure gap there, that we want to identify which stretch of road, if there's no bandwidth there, we need to identify that, and then to take those on. So we will be lobbying and looking at those who do roads. In Coffee Bay, we just got confirmation last week as part of the investment conference, because they want a hotel at Coffee Bay. We want to know what's happening with road. How do you get there? So there's work that is happening there on road. But we also had a report earlier that there was money given in 2010 for road to be developed there. And I don't know, you used the term, Honourable Member, somewhere the road didn't happen, but the money is not there anymore either. This is not something that we discover this as we go along, but we cannot control, we cannot monitor, get accounting for this. But road, then, we'd have to identify, and this is what the master planning work would do, is identify, firstly, what is there? Is it optimal? Why is it not optimal? Who must do what about it, and by when? So that is then the road plan and allocation of roads. On crews, I think there was the ideas that came up for crews were much bigger, for cruise terminals all over. And if you did do that, you could find that we do not actually have enough cruises, and they all go under. And that's a huge risk. Whether it's a five-star hotels, too many five-star hotels, or too many guest houses, if you put too many, all of them are going to go under. So I think where Transnet has then prioritized was Durban and Cape Town, where there is a footprint and they are getting cruises. The others, even I think it's London, PE, they do get cruises. What we, and we've not started this work yet, is to look at how to optimize on that opportunity of the feet that are already coming through. How do we get them to either stay longer, to do more, for example? So ADO is part of even the cruise around where cruisers do come to PE. They can get, are you getting enough of them going to ADO, for example? Around Cape Town, is there more that you can do? whether it's on a three-wheel bicycle, taking people around, taking people for a tour around, even just the V&A waterfront. We're looking at the relationship between V&A, where the tourists come in, and Khayelitsha, for example. So we work on the precinct at Khayelitsha, Lookout Hill, to develop not just the Lookout Hill, but what else can you develop there? And if you're developing that, can the V&A then share their customers that are coming through as crews? How do you then get them to Khayelitsha as well? As well as at the cruise terminal, what is it that you can develop there? Some of those came through. Investment, I think from the department side, as I said, there's not a whole lot of money that we actually own. Most of it goes to SAT and into marketing. The number of jobs, I think there's different jobs. So the EPWP money would be jobs at times in construction, where communities specifically want products developed. And there we are taking a step back as well to look at, is this something that is viable? But sometimes if we just tackle the jobs in the construction, we don't really look at, is this a viable product? Is there a market for this? And then we put the jobs there, we can take the jobs. And then there's no actual market. And then communities say, either we don't have the management or where the people that you've constructed. So we're doing, I think, more thorough work on there. And then the jobs, for example, along the blue flags, those are permanent jobs in there. Whereas with the hotel, once it's constructed, we're not counting the same number of jobs. And then the jobs that are there are the number of jobs that a hotel needs to run. The other benefits then are in GDP, in the revenue, other smaller businesses, and the, for example, agriculture that hotels need. So those are the if you look at the ratio between direct and indirect contribution of tourism, it's about 1 to 3. So those kind of, the three is about jobs in other sectors that are not directly the hotel. And so once the hotel is there, it makes laundry possible, there's linen that's consumed and others. So often we are focusing on the one. I think this is often the kind of ratio that, or when we do the ratio like that, often it can be misleading. And often we're finding, and this is why when municipalities are not funding tourism, they also look just looking at their core. They're not looking at what else tourism is bringing into the economy. So often find the funds are not made available for tourism. We are engaging with the municipal infrastructure grant colleagues, with the capital infrastructure grant, the critical infrastructure grant from DTI, for example, to look at if, and for them to see tourism as a factory. Our factory is not in one place somewhere. It's everywhere where there's tourism product. Whereas if it's manufactured, you can identify the factory, go to the factory gate, take the raw materials there, produce and take the stuff to France where people might buy. Tourism, they come here, they consume, they leave. But when they look at critical infrastructure, they're looking for a factory. And so they might not, when it's a tourism infrastructure or support infrastructure for tourism, they might not put the money. So we're engaging with DTI, for example, so that they might then put the money in into the route. But it's a mindset change that we are busy with. It's not a quick, easy thing. We've been in existence, at least what I do and what we do in the planning for, this is in our second year. So we're learning and doing and having to challenge everyone, whether it's ministers that don't understand our sector, we're having to sometimes educate. We've raised issues about the tension between mining and tourism. You will see all the reports, the major issue that's coming up. Do you want to do resource maintenance for tourism or do you want to get the mining? And then after a while you've got no minerals and no tourism. It's not been raised yet, but it's something that's a challenge in critical areas. So I think on the jobs, the difference there between what do we do and when we put the money in from EPWP compared to a tourism product, where you might want to run your operation as lean as possible. You've got low seasons when you don't have tourists coming in and you've got a staff there, for example. And I'm just guessing that is, I think, why those numbers would look efficiencies and the ratios, it looks very different. Investment, but how to make sure communities benefit, not only jobs. We are busy with a project we are about to appoint a service provider to assist us with. We'll be looking at an ownership model where if a community or a municipality has a product and not managing it well or cannot manage it, or for example on land that has been restored to a community, how do you bring in or create the management for that so that if the community cannot manage it, it's going to run into the ground. Even if it's agriculture, you find there's a farm that's been given back and it's not, if they do not have the experience of running it, suddenly there's not mangoes or whatever it is that was coming out of the farm. The same with tourism, and the potential is there. So we're looking at how do we create that management, incubate them, identify them, train them up so that they are able to go in now. The Free State has asked us, they want to put concessions out because the state also occupies the space that could be there available for transformation. So if the state is there, black private operators cannot be there. They are looking at a whole basket of their resources where they want to do concessions. We are going to try and assist them. Now the project at the moment is to develop, for example, all of the sample contracts that you need. We've got a co-management agreement, for example, from Ismangaliso, about how they work with communities where you've got up to 70% ownership by communities. There's a request for proposals for someone to go and run a hotel at Skukuza that Sam Park has built. So they're not going to operate that, so there's an opportunity there. So we'll be drawing on documents like that to set up the samples. Now, if we're bringing in investment, whether it's investment from Joburg or FDI, into Ismangaliso or any other area, it doesn't have to include the management of the facility. So even in that case, we want to look at how do we have the management and not the usual suspects, because there are a few. Well, there are some. Tebe does management services at hotels. I think Torvest does some of that. We want to give all that to Torvest. Then there are others where Bella Bella has been given and the same company has a lot of those kind of concessions. Can we create new ones? So that is a project that we are going into so that we can start answering some of this. Because even if it's FDI that comes in, the big hotel, there's a group from the UAE that wants to build a Beyond the Stars hotel in Cape Town. This is 7-star Beyond, one and only. But they might bring all of the management, all the FDI, and all the value will leave. Thailand, up to 70% of the value of what Torres spent leaves Thailand. If it's Russia, the plane is Russian, the bus is Russian, the bus driver is Russian and speaks Russian, and the resort is owned by Russians. And we could have that kind of model. So we are trying to respond to that in this way, and also to make sure that it's spread as widely as possible, not a few suspects, whether they're black or white. Much more after a few years we can be satisfied if we then give all of it to the same company. So that is where we're trying to spread. I'm not sure, Chair, if the time is allowing. Let's see, I'm just trying to find where, in terms of capacity, some of the stuff, and there are the hard skills, the specific skills, there is a need to understand is how many of which skills. Some, yes, you can see and know. On the boats, the people in Durban, the shark sport in Durban, they train people from not being able to swim to be able to dive to 60 meters. They train them to build boats. They've done that. They've donated those boats to communities where they need them, for example. So we have some base to develop those kind of skills so that if you say you want a black company to take that license for shark cave diving, where would that company have come from? Unless you give it to someone who's bringing in money or going to promise other partners who've got the skills and the background, they're going to promise they're going to bring the government money in. How else do you create that? So there might be a base to create those skills, to create those, and they've worked with, for example, Port St. John's. They've worked, I think, with two cohorts there. I've raised, and Western Cape will take this up with the National Sea Rescue Institute and see how do they assist in then developing cohorts like that. So the license is available. You do have people there. We, in terms of planning tourism, I think, which is a big gap, the skills and the capacity there. So you might have people at local government. They might or might not have studied tourism. They were told one day you're not doing tourism. We've developed a destination planning manual as an arm's length resource in the previous financial year. We are now currently busy doing training in all 9 provinces on that manual. We're doing that, we're serializing it over 2 sessions, so one day each. By the end of December, we'll have done all 9 provinces. And that is a start. Although it is an arm's length resource, we are starting with that. The feedback we're getting is very good. It addresses a critical need. Our universities do not teach this area. It's a very mixed discipline between town planning, tourism, and other skills. That we'll have to look at how we plug that gap again in the long term. So, and this is not just coastal. We also look after all of the rest of the country. So where we find these things, we respond to them. We respond all across. Some of the training happened, I think, last week. We were in the Western Cape. That is in capacity building. And my boss has now nudged me and said, "Be quiet."
So, thank you, Stephen. I think to address 2 things before we leave. The one is the figures, and you're quite right. The 164 million is purely the department's contribution to this. So the numbers are a difficult thing, which is why we've asked KwaZulu-Natal to look at how we can do the economic modeling for coastal and marine tourism so that we can properly disaggregate the numbers. But you're quite right. These numbers are, there's vast improvements that we can make in the numbers, and the 164 million is purely for money that we are directly investing. If we wanted to look at what we're investing it in, it is slide 36. These are projects that we are directly funding. And in addition to these, the work that we're funding is a skills development work, the Blue Flag Program. So this slide really talks to the various projects that we're funding in these different provinces. This is our direct contribution. The second direct contribution is linked to the work that is being done on the Indian Atlantic route. So what we will now do is to take forward all of the product development work that has been recommended coming out of the Indian Atlantic route. And the second thing that we will take forward in working with SA Tourism is the marketing support for the DMOs along that route. I'm not sure which slide it was, but this is basically, Honourable Member Adams, the skills development is very specific. So it's not generic skills development. So for the first node, we're looking at a different set of skills development as it's highlighted here to the second node. And that basically comes from what we understand is the supply in the area, the demand, and the gap between the supply and demand. So it's not generic in any way, shape, or form. It has looked specifically at the entire coastline in the region and what is actually needed in each specific geographic area to make both product development, marketing, and skills development happen. The other point I wanted to raise, and in my last life, I was actually part of the team that was involved with the development of the PPP toolkit with National Treasury many moons ago, because at that point in time, the Cradle was the first and I think only tourism PPP in the country. And so the team that worked on that actually helped Treasury develop the PPP toolkit. The reality of it is that there isn't any more money in the government fiscus to do any work. So the work that we do reprioritizes the money that we have. Where there is opportunity and what we are doing to unlock funds is, for example, the work we've been doing with the EU to secure the funding for Bavian's Kloof and the Dinosaur Project. So we continue to look for sources outside of that. The other opportunity then is working with the NEF, and the NEF has a really great model where they work with communities
they do two things. The one thing is that they buy equity for communities into projects, so it's real equity. The second thing that they do is that they work with communities to develop the capacity for those communities to take over the running of facilities. So the NEF and ourselves are a partner in the Transformation Fund, and we're looking then at how we actually are working with communities to develop ownership models, not just that they are going to be working in specific spaces. We see the issue of land reform as an opportunity for tourism, because what land reform allows us to be able to do is to have meaningful contributions from a community that is substantial, their ownership of the land, and for them to have real ownership as opposed to actually just being able to provide services. So land reform in the tourism space is an opportunity. Community ownership is an opportunity. Working with traditional leaders is an opportunity, because it's about real ownership in that space. And then, of course, I think the first point Stephen started with, which was that we can't go anywhere where we actually don't have partners. Because as national government, we don't actually own spaces. So essentially, we have to work in partnership with local authorities and with provinces and communities in order to make anything happen. And we go where we're invited, where we see the potential, where we see the room for us to be able to assist. In terms of the implementation plan, I think that the reality of it is that for each of the initiatives I've spoken to, there is a different implementation plan. So each one of them has their own timelines for implementation, because they're not the same creature. And that's why that's a 600-page document. It's not useful from the perspective of oversight, because literally it is a step-by-step process. Write this letter to, set up that meeting, lodge this application, literally step-by-step. But the DPME does have a website that is an Operation Pakisa website that reports against progress on all of the different focus areas within Operation Pakisa. And then I think we have dealt in the main with all of the questions. On Blue Flag Beaches, our partners are local government. And one of the challenges is that we work with local government, but when their priorities shift, they might stop funding for the infrastructure maintenance, etc., and that's how they lose the status. So I think that we work with them very strongly, because those beaches are within their mandate. And we do our best to support the work that they're doing in those spaces. And it's why we started the Green Coast Program, actually, to support the work that's being done. Honourable Chair, I think I'm going to stop there, because I think that we have said a lot. I hope that we've addressed all of them, but if there are those that we have not, we will then do that in a written submission to the committee.
Thank you very much to the department for the presentation. I think it was very, very informative. And I think we must, even if it's next year, again look at the Operation Pakisa so that we can follow the progress that is made. But thank you very much, and thank you very much to the members for the very good questions that you said. I think our bar with regard to question setting is very high, and you go over that bar every day. So thank you, and I think the meeting will adjourn now. Thank you. Thank you.
but there is something that is lacking. There's too much English, there's too much education, there's too much of high power this, when actually tourism is not really in the sky. It is with the people, in the grassroots people. And sometimes they come with big English, big policy implementation, this stuff. Our people don't understand those things. They want the nuts and bolts of how to do it. And again, this thing of assisting the partnerships that they are making. Like in the Free State, there was an area where the department had sunk in hundreds and hundreds of millions onto projects that were dead because the buildings were there, but there was nothing happening because the local people were not understanding what the department was all about. And I don't know, there seems to be a communication breakdown. And also, I wish we could, as Parliament, come up with ways of making the policies or whatever, you know, rules and what, to be more user-friendly. Because sometimes you find that the department has got barriers because they are not supposed to be doing this. And you find that that's where the points are missed. I don't know. Maybe we need to apply our minds more to identify exactly where we can untie this knot. Because, take for instance, Port St. John. That thing has been talked about for decades and decades, but still today, nothing visible is going on. Thank you,
Member, for your passion. And I think the department understands.
Yeah.
But we must know that tourism is dependent on other partners. And you see, the elephant in the room is the elephant of integration. There's too much work in silence. Our departments must work integrated for the future. But nevertheless, thank you for your input. Thank you. And this, Mrs. Stanton.
Okay. This is good.